We're recording, FYI.
I got positive feedback from more than a few of you that you would like to be able to review a recording. Obviously, you're not required to review it since you're all here. But if you want to, it should be available. We'll see how good the sound quality is tonight. I'll upload to Angel.
Sorry.
Okay. Usual stuff here. Markers. Chalk.
What time is it?
Time to start.
No. 1st homework on Wednesday. You can turn this in Monday. I haven't changed the due date for the later stuff. Like the stuff I talk about today, I'd still like you to get done the homework part by Wednesday. So don't put off today's homework. Now, I hope that more of you will take advantage of my office hours or my email inbox. If you need help with the homework, or you have some question about what I said in class, if you're too shy to ask me about it here, you know, there are plenty of other ways to ask me about it, plenty of other times and places. Okay. And don't feel like, oh, I'm so far behind, or I don't even know where to begin. You know, just I'll meet you where you're at. All right. This little symbol means increasing. This one means decreasing. We'll talk about that. Were there any questions about what we did last week, though? Change your mind, you can ask me later. Just let me know. Okay, increasing and decreasing sequences. So, with the lim soup and lim imp stuff we did last time, there's this idea of.
Sorry.
What's your name?
It's because, I was going to go back to when you asked. Lost when it comes to like the bounds of the not like the meat like bounds and all that. And the some the Samaritan or the Samaritan.
The Supremo.
Okay. The Supremo.
The Supreme Samaritan.
Yeah. And I was just wondering if you can kind of give like at least just one example of like finding the user premium on
the set.
Oh yeah, on the set.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. The traditional way of talking about it is usually use the words upper. So if you want to think upper, you got to think a vertical number line increasing as you go up. And then there's the dual notion, symmetrical notion. Flip the number line over, and what do you call the concept on a flip number line? You call it that. You got to flip everything though, least to greatest. Okay. So, bunch of stuff here. Right? In some set. And then everything above the set, possibly if the set has a top element, then including that top element, if there is a top element, you have the upper bounds. And then here is the least upper bound. So, okay, how about this? How about 1/2, -1/2, 2/3, -2/3, 3/4, -3/4, 4/5, -4/5, and so on. Okay. So I'll put 0 here, 1/2, -1/2. Now this is a set, so there's no sense of time here. It's just, these are just a bunch of points or marks on my line. Okay, so think of them as all being there at once. Okay? Think of them as all there. The 3/4, you know what's next, the 4/5, the 5/6. Okay, they're all there. And then the negative ones are all there too. The -3/4. This should really be piling up here. -4/5, -5/6, -6/7. Okay. So, can you think of any numbers that are above all of these marks? 1. And nothing less than 1 would work, right? Anything less than 1, like, you know, 0.99 is going to be less than 999 over 1,000, which is 0.999, right? Okay, so if you're thinking about what is an upper bound of S, okay, it's just anything that is 1 or bigger. Okay. The least of these numbers is 1. Okay. So there's to it. Likewise, if you think about all the numbers that are below all this stuff, right, you'll have -1 and everything below that. Those are all lower bounds, right? And the greatest of those lower bounds is -1. This is an example of a bounded set because it has a finite supremum, finite infimum. That is, it has upper bounds and lower bounds. And if you squeeze them as tight as you can, you're at the supreme infimum, you get the smallest closed interval that can
hold this whole set inside it.
The least upper bound is the negative one, right?
No. The negative one is a lower bound. Oh. Yeah. It's a little tricky. You gotta see, because it's up, but then least you're thinking low. So you have to kind of read it backwards. Upper bound, so first think of all the stuff that's above it, and then go to the lowest thing amongst all the stuff above it. Right. Some people just think of it in terms of best upper bound or tightest upper bound. Right? The tightest upper bound is 1. The tightest lower bound is -1. The trick with a word like tightest or best is that it depends on the context, right? For an upper bound, tightest or best means least. For a lower bound, the tightest or best lower bound is the greatest lower bound.
Other questions or comments?
Next board.
So, if you're thinking of what we're doing with sequences last time, you can imagine the tail ranges. But let me try and get the grammar as nice as I can. Ranges of tails of a sum sequence. So, parentheses, not braces. Okay. And things were, if the sequence is going up and down a lot, we had this kind of complicated concept of the upper and lower limit to describe how, if any, all that oscillation gets tamer as you throw away earlier points. It's a little complicated. When we talk about increasing and decreasing sequences, it'll be a lot, that thing will be a lot simpler. In general, your picture is kind of like this. If you look at the range of everything in the sequence, so starting at the first term and everything after that, right, it might look something like this. A whole bunch of stuff. Let's assume at least though it's bounded, right? It doesn't go infinitely far that way or infinitely far up, down, up or down. So we'll assume it's bounded. Because that way there will be a supremum and there will be an infimum. Okay. In general, right, if your sequence is not bounded above or not bound below, then you may not have these. It may go all the way up to infinity or all the way down to negative infinity or both. Because these could be infinitely many different points, right? It might not be, three numbers all repeated. It could be lots of different numbers. Okay, so you start throwing away points. And as you throw away points, right, throw away the first point, now you've thrown away the first and second points. As you throw away points, it may be the case that you had a top element here. And if you did, then if it gets thrown away, then the supremum could come down maybe. It might not, because there might be a bunch of stuff that piles up near it, but it might. So the supremum or the infimum, every time we throw away a point, right, this interval between the sup and the inf could get smaller. It could stay the same, but it could get smaller. Okay.
then what you got to imagine, so I guess my picture here I'm thinking of, like here it's staying the same, and then here it changed to get smaller. And this one was also higher. So I'm kind of imagining these all on a common scale here. And so if you kept doing this, you might get lower and lower supremums. Okay? And you take the inf of all of those things, right? The infimum of all the suprema of all of your ranges of tails of the sequence. And this is the so-called upper limit or limit superior. Right. And then symmetrically over here, we have this picture. Look at this. Something like that. Where if you start throwing away points one at a time, again, just as the suprema might get lower, the infima of the tail ranges may get higher, right? Because if there's some interval here where there's only finite many points, eventually they'll all get thrown away, and then I'll be able to have lower bounds that are higher. So, and you just continue that process forever, throwing away a point one at a time, and see if these things get any higher. And we call the supreme of all that the inf. And as I put in the extra notes for last Wednesday, there I proved that in those notes that this is a cluster point. Right? That was a concept introduced last time. So that, and moreover, this is the greatest cluster point of the sequence. And this is the least cluster point of the sequence. And there may be other cluster points in here. In fact, you can dream up a sequence where, I mean, you can write down a procedure for a sequence that would actually make everything in the whole interval from limb soup to limb inf a cluster point. You can do that. Basically, you have a sequence that lists every rational number in here. And that makes every real in here a cluster point. So there could be a lot of cluster points in between. That's the general situation for a general bounded sequence. Okay? The upper limit and the lower limit could be different, and there could be other cluster points in between. Now, what if your sequence is increasing? And by increasing, I mean every number as you go along is either the same as the last number or higher than the last number. That is a simpler situation. But since I got this nice picture here, and I want to contrast it with a supposedly simple picture, I better erase the chalk over there and keep this. Okay, so, any questions about this before I erase it? Questions about this
phase diagram.
So you all the supremum numbers that you get in the limit, what's it called, the limit supremum?
The limit superior, yeah. Some people just say limb soup, that's fine.
The limb soup?
Yeah.
All right. Do you treat those numbers as a different set so you can get like the infimum and supremum?
Okay. So yeah, it's a little complicated, right? Because here you're taking, you have these sets, and you take each of these sets, assuming it's bounded, right? Then since it's also clearly not empty, it'll have a supremum and infimum. But here, right, what you're doing is, I'll have to take pictures again now, but that's fine. As I defined it last time, define it again, we're going to take the infimum of the suprema of the tails, okay? Okay? So, here, I'll write it slightly differently than I wrote last time, okay? Here's this, right? Here's the first number in the set, and then the next number in the set. Now, there could be repeats, right? The suprema may not always change as you throw away points, but okay. This is what you're doing. You're considering all of those suprema, where you just keep throwing away one more point each time, and then you say, okay, given what's still left from the range of the sequence, has my suprema changed, right? Has it gone down at all? If it's gone down, then that's another number in your set. And you think of all of those numbers, right? All of those suprema from tails, and then you say, okay, what is below all of those suprema? And what's the greatest thing below them all? What's the tightest lower bound? That.
That makes sense?
Yeah. And it's symmetrical for this, right? Flip everything upside down. Imp to soup. Soup to imp. All of these infima of tails, you can ask, what is above them all? Among other things, there is at least one thing above them, right? All these soups, any one of these soups is above all of these imps. So this is a bounded set here, and it is non-empty. So it does have a supremum. Just like this set is, this set of soups is bounded below. Any one of these things is a lower bound. It's just that none of them may be the best lower bound. The best lower bound could be way up here. So this is a non-empty set bounded below, so it does have an infimum. Two-step process there. Sequence, well, more than two steps. From sequence to tails to ranges of tails to suprema of ranges of tails to set of suprema of ranges of tails to infimum of suprema of ranges of tails. But this is a very worthy concept because it's not obvious, you know, a priori, that a bounded sequence has a cluster point at all. Right? That's
And if you look at my proof, you know, it's a bit tricky. You know, you have to read it carefully. I have to use the soup and inf of soup stuff. I have to work them back and forth to get this. Okay. Just showing that a bounded sequence has a cluster point, that's significant, and that's one of the first things that you use these for, to help you understand sequences. Anything, if your sequence is stuck inside some interval, right? If its range is bounded, then there's going to be at least one point where the sequence piles up, right? Because the sequence piles up at each of these suprema, right? And these suprema pile up at that infimum. Or I should say the tails pile up at the suprema. Except possibly, you throw away a point, so it doesn't really pile up. It does pile up at here, and it piles up here, so to speak. And now, I need to tell you about that simple picture. The simpler picture, what do things look like when it's increasing and decreasing? Natural number m and another natural number n greater than or equal to it, then the earlier term in the sequence xm is less than or equal to the later term. Okay, so everything is either staying the same or going up. Some m, and you just increase m to m plus 1, m plus 2, m plus 3, and so on, eventually you hit this number n that's bigger, right? And if at each individual increment you're either staying the same or going up, then after any finite number of moves like that, you're either staying the same or going up. So it matches that kind of picture if you think of time or n is going that way. So you think of x1, x2, maybe x3 is the same as x2, and maybe x4 goes up, x5 goes up, and so on. Sequence is also bounded above, then everything is going to be very simple. The lim sup, the lim imp will be the same, and they'll also be the same as the suprema of the whole range. We'll write all that down. Okay? if your sequence is increasing and bounded above, so there's some upper bound for the whole range of points that ever happen in the sequence. If it's then it's also clearly bounded below, right? The first term of the sequence is a lower bound. So if it's bounded, then it has a limb soup and a limb imp, and I claim they're the same. In fact, I claim that if you look at this sequence at any tail of it, if you throw away the first point, right, what is the best lower bound? It's just going to be x2, right? And then whatever the if you consider the supremum of the whole sequence is range, the whole thing. If you start throwing away one point at the bottom, then another point, you're never going to change what this is, right? Because no matter how much you throw away, there's still going to be all this stuff here, which is actually controlling what the best upper bound is, right? Throwing stuff away from the bottom of the range is not going to affect what the upper bounds are. And since it's an infinite sequence, there's always more stuff, right? So if there's a repeat, like this, you throw away x2, well, you haven't actually changed the range because x3 is still there. So even with repeats, there's always going to be more stuff. So if it's an increasing sequence, you're just throwing away stuff from the bottom. So actually, any tail will have the same supremum. Just summarize it as for all k, natural number. If you look at the supremum of the tail that starts at k, it's the same as the supremum of the whole thing, and that's the same as the limb soup, right? Because all these supremum tails are going to be the same. So it's just the same number over and over again. So when you take the infimum, you're just talking about the infimum, the greatest lower bound of a single number. That's the number itself. Okay. So let me write down that idea. Sounded worthy of writing down. Just a single number. All of these are the same number. Okay, so instead of taking the infima of potentially many different numbers, it's just one number. The best lower bound for a single number is itself. So you just forget the outer inf operation. The upper limit is just the supremum of the range. What about now? What now? You might be wondering, why is the lymph going to be the same? Well, you think, as I said, lymph. Wherever you start, that's your lymph, right? If you start it here, the best lower bound you can get is here. If you start here, the best lower bound of your tail range is here. If you start here, the best lower bound of your tail range you can get is there, because you have to be less than or equal to this. And on the other hand, everything after that is the same or higher. So if you bound this below, you bound all that later stuff below as well. Of everything from then on after that is just the kth term itself. So, I've written myself into a corner there. Let's get this idea. Okay, so what is that lymph then? It's going to equal the suprema of all of the infima of tail ranges. Possible k, start at term k, get the resulting tail range. But since our sequence is increasing, this infima is just whatever term it starts at. Okay. So you're looking at the suprema of all terms xk, where k is a natural number. It's the same thing as saying all terms xn, where n is a natural number, right? Either way, you're talking about the suprema of the set x1, x2, x3, x4, right? Doesn't matter whether I describe it with a k or with an n, it's this. But that is that is what we have right here. Actually, I think what I'll do is I'll change the grammar on this a little bit here. I'll put a period there. Because what I've actually done here is I've explained why this is true. Tail ranges are the same. All the infima of tail ranges are just terms of the sequence itself. It all comes together to the same thing.
say the sequence is convergent to limit L if L is the lim sup and the lim imp. So if your sequence is bounded and it's increasing, it's going to converge in the sense of not only does everything pile up at some number, but it doesn't pile up at any other number, right? The lim sup is the greatest cluster point, the greatest point where there's a bunch of terms from the sequence that pile up around it. This is the least cluster point. If the lim sup and the lim imp are the same, then only one cluster point. So, I'm not going to give a whole part yet. I'm going to give you a little claim here, another way of thinking about this. Here's another way of thinking about this business of piling up, in greatest cluster point, least cluster point. If a sequence is bounded and I have some real number C, then the lim sup of my sequence is less than or equal to C if and only if for all epsilon positive, the sequence eventually is stuck under C plus epsilon. Another way of thinking about this business here, you might call this concept of for all epsilon positive, some tail range is bounded above by C plus epsilon. You might think of it as for all positive epsilon, the sequence eventually commits to a being in the interval negative infinity to C plus epsilon. In the sense that all the elements left in the sequence are in here. The eventually means I gotta throw away finitely many of the things at the front of the sequence. But after finitely many things are thrown away, you might not have C itself be an upper bound, but something just a little bit bigger than C is an upper bound of some tail. And if I throw for a smaller epsilon, I may need to throw away more stuff to get this. Type up a proof of that, but I'm not going to go through it right now. I think you'd be more interested in an example. Of this increasing and decreasing. Okay, so let's imagine the following thing.
I'm going to start with the number, say, 1. Okay? Then I'm going to add 1 and take its square root. And I'm going to add 1 and take its square root. I'm going to add 1 and take its square root. I'm going to add 1 and take its square root. I'm going to add 1, I'm going to take its square root. Okay, I'm going to keep doing that. If I do that process, I will get a sequence of numbers, yeah? I'm going to call it this. In general, if you had any term xn, you go to the next term by adding 1 to what you had and taking the square root. Okay? Okay. If you have a calculator, you could compute the first few values of this sequence. The question is, does it converge? I'm going to prove it does converge. And next time, we'll prove exactly what it converges to. This thing actually converges to the golden ratio, 1 plus root 5 over 2, believe it or not. And we're going to prove today that it converges. Because what we'll do is we will prove this sequence is increasing and bounded. And if we know it's increasing and bounded, then by the argument I went through here, we'll know that the lim sup and the limit are the same, and so it'll converge. But by our definition, there's only going to be one cluster point, just one thing where everything piles up. Yeah. Two things you gotta do. We're gonna show it is increasing, and we're gonna need to show that it is bounded above. And that's enough. If a sequence is increasing and bounded above, then it's some sort of limit. Okay? And I'm going to have you do a similar thing for a homework problem. So before I get into this, I'll tell you what the delayed problem for the homework is. This is decreasing and bounded below . Why would you want to prove those two facts? Well, the point is, just as if a sequence is increasing and bounded above, then it's also bounded below, and the lim f equals the lim sup. Likewise, if a sequence
is bounded below and decreasing, then just using the flipped upside down version of the argument we did over there in the corner of the room, if a sequence is bounded below and decreasing, then it is also bounded above by its first term. And just the flipped upside down version of what I wrote over there. Flip the picture over there upside down too, and you'll see why it's true, right? It's also bounded above, and its lim sup equals its lim inf. Okay. So that means it. So that means by our definition here, it converges. So if you can prove these two things about this sequence, you'll have proven that it converges. And if you play around with a calculator, you can probably guess what it converges to, although I won't ask you to prove that it converges to that just yet. Okay, so that'll be your homework for today. And it'll be simpler than what I do with this one because it's just dividing by 3 instead of doing something like a squared root. Okay. Questions or comments? Okay, I have about 23 minutes to convince you that this converges. This little claim here is kind of a down payment on Wednesday. We'll do some more stuff with this kind of epsilonics on Wednesday. I'm not going to use this little claim here any further today. Just type up the proof for you to think about it. Okay, so great.
Yeah.
Okay. This is going to be a little interesting exercise. And what happens with this thing is that basically in the process of trying to prove step one, that it's, the sequence is increasing, I'm going to end up being forced to confront a question of, is the sequence bounded above by a certain special number, the golden ratio, in fact. Okay? And then what I'll do is I'll prove that, yes, it is bounded above by the golden ratio. Next time we'll prove it also converges to that. That's the best upper bound. For now, I'm just going to prove that it's at least bounded above by the golden ratio. And it'll turn out that I need to do that in order to prove this. So first I'm going to start on this, but I'm going to get kind of stuck. And then to get unstuck, I'm going to have to do step two. So that's how it's going to go. And to sort of help you understand geometrically, why is that? Why should some weird sequence events like that happen? I'll show you a kind of here's a picture. Okay. This is the line y. This is the graph y equals x. Of sort of the scales aren't the same. That's why this is not a 45 degree angle. And then here is going to be y equals the square root of 1 plus x. So we'll start one. Okay, so I start at 1. Then what I do is I see, okay, take 1 plus the square root of 1. And then I walk over here. That is, I take the y value, which is the square root of 2, and then walk it over here to make it an x value. Okay. So this is my x1, this is my x2. Now for this x2, I'm going to walk up here, and at that point you're at y equals the 1 plus the square root of 1 plus the square root of 2, which is the third term in our sequence. Okay. Now walk over to this, to the line y equals x, okay, and now drop down so that you're at an x coordinate. Okay. And then if you want to go further, you walk up, and then you go to the right, you walk up and you go to the right. So what's happening is, it's, because if we imagine zooming in from left, it's this, I don't know, lower the scales being a bit. We just keep going in like that. Okay? So intuitively, right, this is kind of a, this is just like a picture that strongly suggests it should converge to the x value where these curves meet. Okay? And that x value is the golden ratio. One plus root 5 all over 2. This equation is true if and only if. That's the mathematician's abbreviation for if and only if. If and only if. So this is a non-negative square root, so you need x to be non-negative, and you need, of course, the square of both sides to be true. Okay. And if you look at this, well, you can solve a quadratic equation, right? Complete the square. So think of this as 2 times x over 2. So if I add and x over 2 times a half times x. So then if I complete the square here, if I add a half squared both sides, then this is a perfect square. Right? So going back to my high school algebra here. All right. So this is x minus a half squared equal to 1 plus a fourth. By force, x minus a half has got has to be plus or minus the square root of 5/4. Plus or minus root 5 over 2. And so the only non-negative solution you got is when you choose positively, right? This pair of equations, well, pair of relations, because technically that's an inequality, not an equation, an inequality. Yeah. So we have a unique solution, often called the golden ratio, sometimes written with the Greek letter phi. Now, this kind of computation here is relevant to figuring out this, okay? This is true if and only if what? Well, let's just use the formula. For how we get to the next term. So, the next term is greater than or equal to what came before, if and only if what came before is less than or equal to the square root of 1 plus what came before. Okay. So this now what I'd like to do is square both sides and say that that doesn't change the solution set, but unfortunately it might, right? Because any negative number is less than non-negative square root, right? In fact, we haven't even proved that this is well defined technically. For all we know, I've drawn a picture, but aside from my picture, how do I know this doesn't get really negative and make this undefined? So before I go further, let's prove that for all n, these numbers are non-negative. Then we won't have to worry about squaring both sides of an inequality, causing weird changes to the solution set or anything like that. Okay. So how am I going to prove that? The trick is induction. Anybody know how proof by induction works? And some of you have taken discrete math, so you should have seen that. How do you prove something by induction?
You start with the basis.
Mm-hmm. And then what?
And then you prove that it works for n plus 1.
Yeah. You prove that it works for n equals 1. Then you prove that if it hasn't gone bad at n, then it's not bad at n plus 1 either. So you prove that it starts good and that it never goes bad. Okay. So very quick and easy inductive proof. Okay. It starts good, right? One is greater than or equal to 0. And if you assume that you're at some term n where it hasn't gone bad yet, so you've still got xn greater than or equal to 0, right? If you've got that, then take the square root of 1 plus xn. Well, that's going to be bigger than or equal to the square root of 1 plus 0, which is 1. So you're fine. Okay? It starts out good. And if it's good at stage n, it's still good at the next stage. Let's see. To emphasize the whole next n part. Okay.
starts good and it stays good. So, okay. It's hard we have to actually prove everything instead of just drawing a picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd actually prove, yes, it's non-negative. Yes, of course it stays non-negative. If you want to convince somebody beyond a shadow of a doubt, even a blind person who can't see my pictures, well, this is how you can do it, right? Tell them, hey, the first term's not negative, and then at any term you go out to, term a billion or whatever, that's not negative, then the next term's not negative, so it's never going to turn negative on you. Erasing a board before I get a picture. Okay. So we're getting a little bit deeper into the weeds of this proof now. Subclaims. We don't have to worry about it turning negative. Now I can safely square both sides of the equation and it's not going to screw up any the solution set. This is true. The solution set for this restricted to non-negative numbers. The non-negative solution set for this is the same as the non-negative solution set for this. And now I'm just going to do the exact same kind of rearrangement here. Okay? See, one nice thing about completing the square instead of just memorizing the quadratic formula is completing the square can help you solve an inequality as well. Okay, so add negative x to both sides of the equation. That preserves the inequality. Now, just like over here, add in a fourth to both sides. So, yeah, let's just jump ahead, do the exact same step. So this thing here is exactly. Take the square root of both sides of this thing. So this is true if and only. How can the square be smaller than this? Well, if and only if you're between the two square roots. It's just a. Graph a parabola, right? Vertex at a half, and y value of 5/4. Two solutions right there.
one of these solutions, the endpoint solution set here. So add a half to all three things here, and it'll just shift things on the number line. So order of the numbers doesn't change if you add a half to all three of them. Okay. This thing is automatically true for us, right? This is a negative number. Okay. But we already know that our terms are never non-negative. So demanding that x be greater than or equal to this negative number, that's automatically satisfied. So our non-negative solution set is just everything. That's under the golden ratio. Okay. And I emphasize that this is this is only equivalent because we're always non-negative. Right? The non-negative solution sets for these two inequality systems are the same. If you allow negative numbers, then there will be more solutions to this one than to this one. But restricting to non-negative numbers, to demand this is the same as demanding that. Okay. So that's the game. You do the completing the square thing with an inequality instead of an equation, and you are able to show that being increasing is actually just the same as being bounded above by the golden mean. But how do we prove that upper bound? So I guess make sure I write it down. So one is done if 2 is done, okay? So if I can prove that I never get above that golden mean, then just following these things back, I get exactly what I need. The sequence is increasing if and only if I stay under that. Okay? So if I do this, then I'm done. The sequence is increasing and bounded above, all in one final blow to the mystery here. So. Okay. And you'll confirm our picture over there. We really do. That all these numbers are always going to be to the left of where the curves intersect at 1 plus root 5 over 2. So, induction, again. X1 is 1, which is less than or equal to 2, that's equal to 2 over 2, which is 1 plus 1 over 2. And the square root of 5 is bigger than 1, right? So yeah, no problem there. Okay, so it starts good. Now I got to prove it stays good. Okay? So I'm going to assume I'm at some stage n, where it's still good. And I'm going to prove that when I go to the next stage, it's still good. Okay. So now, what's this going to be? Well, this is going to be 1 plus this. And that doesn't look very good. I mean, if you collect like terms, this is actually like this. Okay. So we're very, very lucky. Watch this.
square this. Collect, write out the terms like this. Collect those like terms. Okay, so by this little bit of reasoning here, we've got that actually if it's good at stage n, it's good at the next stage. That's how you convince a blind person that this sequence is bounded above and therefore increasing and therefore convergent. Now I'm out of time, so next time we'll actually prove that yes, like the picture shows, it really, really does converge to the golden mean.
Yes. Yes. I think I'm. Let me see.